And for the first and only time on this April Fool's Day edition of Bathrobe Spears Bodsides, the complete We Didn't Light the Fire. I know you've all been waiting for some years for that Billy Joel number. Actually, we are, of course, bounding into daylight savings time, as folks will soon be discovering. And so I'm an hour late, or an hour early, or however you want to look at it. But it's been a kind of a hustle morning to get over here. I woke up about 20 minutes ago, and I'm here. So, whoa. Sounds like an incoming call. Let's see who we got here on the line.
Hi, you're on free radio.
Actually, you're right on time.
Well, there you are.
Yeah.
However, I'm late because I wasn't able to spend any time preparing for this show, so in my schedule, I am way behind the eight ball.
But in your daylight standard time.
It's kind of dazzled the daylights out of me.
Well, yeah, people are probably still waking up. Anyway, I missed all the news this morning, too. I missed Free Speech Radio News and the California Indian Radio Project. So,
you know, if you'd like to talk about it at all during this period of time, in the next half hour, I invite you to come into the studio, Vinny, because I think perhaps people aren't even up for my show yet. They still think it's an hour earlier, and they may be waiting for your show.
Yeah, possibly, but that's all right. No, I don't really feel like doing radio anyway, so I put the comp disc on this morning. Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, could you make sure that gets put back in the case and stuff? Because I just made that, and the one that was playing.
No copyright?
That's the one.
All right. You get to hear the actual inner workings of free radio listeners if you tune in early enough. So I want to commend you, and I will do that, Vinny. And please, if you've got any more comments that are more directly on the human rights issue, call back.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
So, good morning, everybody, and it is 2.5 hours of Bathrobe Spears Broadside Civil Rights on the Streets coming at you for the next, well, until 1:30 anyway, on 96.3, which is the free speech, free radio, or somewhat free radio, as some have called it, here in Santa Cruz. I mean, there are some things that the collective here frowns on and that we don't talk about, and I say that both with a slight mocking edge and yet at the same time with a slight serious edge, because it's true. And I've had my disagreements with them at different times, but I also have my agreements with them. So we get into that, too. Here's another call coming in. Hi there.
Yeah. You know, this whole thing is, the interesting thing is that the daylight setback happened on the 1st of April, which is April Fool's Day. So you tell somebody, hey, did you set your clock ahead? And they'll go, no, really? Yeah, you got to set your clock ahead. And you tell them at the last minute, oh, I was just kidding with you. Go ahead and set it back. So
and
later in the day,
April
when somebody
Fool?
Says, hey, did you set your clock ahead? They go, no, I ain't going to fall for that twice.
This is a riot. But, you know, most of the folks that perhaps listen to the show don't believe in clocks anyway. So what can I tell you?
That's good.
Anything you want to report that you've seen on the street regarding the police or folks living outside or squatting?
Not really.
Okie doke.
I mean, I guess they got some expansion project going for in mind for the shelter there.
I think there's an expansion that does not necessarily involve any kind of shelter. It's not a shelter. You're talking about the homeless services center, I think.
That's
a strange thing about the homeless services center.
They're not doing.
They don't provide shelter at the homeless services center.
They're going to put in another storage bay, though.
Right.
Too.
They don't provide shelter there. What they provide is they provide like a pickup point for buses to
storage.
Take people to churches, take right lockers, and a phone you can use.
And meals.
And 1.5 meals, if you count breakfast as a meal.
Okay.
Only one portion, thank you very much. Don't come back for more.
And chase everybody off to St. Francis during lunch.
And they're a place for folks to hang out during the day, so the merchants, God help them, don't have to put up with the wrong kind of folks downtown.
On one of the local talk
out.
Shows, there's a talk show host. He mentioned, he was talking, he does a lot of like real estate topics.
Mm-hmm.
And like affordable housing and whatnot. But he had a guest on from Monterey, their homeless resource and such center. And we got a long way to go to catch up with them, man. We got a long way to go, Robert, I tell you.
Really? I should probably try to talk to that guy.
I don't know if you've heard, there's a female there called Tammy.
Mm-hmm.
And she's involved with, like, the major nonprofit organization involved with the homeless. And I called up and then... asked her about the sleeping bans in Santa Cruz, and she said she knew very little, but...
She's a Monterey... What was this?
I feel that what they're doing, the way
hang
she...
Hang on a second, hang on a second. This is KSCO we're talking that you called into, or...?
Yeah, it was that talk show. It was that talk show...
And this was... Yeah, they have a... KSCO sometimes actually does stuff on homelessness, though. They usually have this very...
Well, this is just... It's
they have
Steve
a very
something.
Right-wing
it's
audience.
Steve something. Basically, it's Steve something, or other...
So you called in, you talked to her, huh? Well, what happened? What did you learn about the Monterey Homeless Service?
It's far outpaced ours. I mean, I would like to see they give people job placements. They have faculties to train people for jobs,
mm-hmm.
for job skills and such.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of service entry jobs, yeah, or entry level service jobs, but they.
Did you get any sense of the rents down there, whether it's, you know, expensive or...
They have surges.
Mm-hmm. How about sleeping ban? I know, I'm pretty sure they have some kind of sleeping ban in some of the jurisdictions, although it's a little unclear.
They have something to do with private property in Monterey. Anything that's not, like, occupied property.
What about sleeping on a bench in a public place?
I couldn't tell you, but I think they have it by...
Well, your job is to research this whole issue and come back next show with a complete report.
Oh, my God.
You could be the man that links us up with Monterey County, our sister
best
county.
Best I can do
south.
Is keep my ears open.
Keep your ears open and your nose well attended to.
Provocative questions.
Indeed.
I learned that from you, Robert.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah.
I'm learning that provocative questions get you a lot of heat, particularly among people who are... concerned about protecting the those yeah. who are in power.
Especially
so.
When you have a background. That's yeah.
Yeah, you need to keep putting the truth out there, even if people tell you, oh, it's not nice to talk the truth, or you're not going to solve anything, or be constructive, or lay low until the politicians turn to you with a smile and say, what is it you have to say next? No, you got to say the truth, and you got to keep repeating it again and again and again until it has a real impact, not so much on the politicians, but on the
you
community.
You can always tell how annoying one is to one. Or how persistent one is by the response of the individual as far as going out of their way to slander the individual in a non-physical, threatening way. In other words, something other than, and they'll go out of their way to set something up, to say something bad about you, to exaggerate a
what are you talking about? There's no one who would criticize me. How can you say
okay.
that?
I won't even go there, but...
Thank you, caller. I'm going to roll. I got to do my... go into this, but
someday I'm going to push you on that, though. A lot of those rumors I've heard.
Hey, no. I am really well regarded by everyone you can imagine.
But that's just because that you're so persistent.
I am persistently
well regarded.
That
they go out of their way to get something on you.
Mayor
I'd like to believe that.
The other day, Fitzmaurice invited me to come stay at his house. I told him, look, homeless people, you need to be there. We know of your great, you know, compassion
yeah.
in opening your house every night to 5 or 10 homeless people. And he agreed that, actually, this is April 1st. Talk to you later.
All right.
And April Fools, no, I am, of course, savaged by many people in this community who think of themselves as homeless advocates. It's kind of ironic because they feel I throw a barrier between them and the officialdom downtown, that if only I were not saying those mean and nasty things about Tiny Tolerance Tim Fitzmaurice, or Emperor Fitz, as I call him, there would be a better situation. The sleeping ban wouldn't be here, as I think it was... Mark Premack said this when running for election. If only people like Robert Norris hadn't raised their voices in the way they do in the indecorous, impolite, abrasive, shrill manner. He didn't use these words, but this was his inference when he came before the homeless working group, which I was a part of, and it was a good group. It kind of died about a month or two ago. Back in the fall that Mike Schmidt ran at the Chamber of Commerce, Premack was giving statements about, along with other candidates, but what he would do around the sleeping ban, because we had about, well, I think 12 of the candidates came in. We actually recorded their statements and have them on file for those who want to hear them. We have to dig them out, so you might be interested in that. But there is this belief, this really kind of, it's an understandable and naive belief that if you're only nice enough to the politicians, they'll be nice back to you. After all, they are reasonable women and men. Certainly, we can always talk with them. And politicians are very good at talking. There's no question about that. What they aren't very good at doing is keeping campaign promises that are unpopular with more powerful parts of their constituency, or parts of their constituency that they perceive to be more powerful, like those with money, like those with business interests, like those with a sort of a prior agenda to any kind of recognition of the rights of homeless people, like some social service providers, for example, who want their funding continued regardless of what civil rights are taken away from homeless people, partially because it's their job and they'd like to get paid, and partially because they feel it's the best thing for homeless people and that social services take a higher priority than civil rights. And let's not upset the politicians with requests for civil rights when what we really need is another family shelter for 20 people or 20 families in a homeless population of 1,000 to 2,000 that's outside. It's kind of sad. And it's, however, it is real, and it's something people have to understand in order to evolve a strategy that will create some real change. And that is what we need to do. Those of us concerned about the infamous Santa Cruz City sleeping ban, the sections of their camping ordinance, Municipal Code 6.36, that make it a crime to sleep outside after 11 o'clock at night or in a non-domicile structure or in a vehicle. All those three things are verboten on $54 fine, which you will find if you go to court occasionally, or, and not just occasionally, I would say frequently, turns into a $162 fine. Bail and plus you add the penalty assessment of $112 or $122 or whatever it is. If you don't show up for the court appearance, it becomes a $272 fine. It's supposed to be limited by the birdseed buyers' changes in the sleeping ban sections and the camping ordinance in 1999, which said you could only have a $54 fine, you only have to do maximum of 20 or 8 hours of community service. But that's not how it is, for example, in the court of meat grinder Mulligan in the basement of the county building, who's the judge, he's actually a referee, to whom these cases usually go. And that's not what the people taking care of the bail schedule tell you if you try to go in and pay the ticket beforehand. It's not $54, it's $162. At least that's what I found about 2.5 weeks ago. Brought it up with former attorney and legal worker Ray Glock Grunike, also a Green Party activist, who expressed a serious interest in that issue. And I'm hoping that we can get some attorneys and people with legal knowledge. And Ray, though he's not an attorney, is a man who's done a lot of good work, massive amounts of legal work for homeless people when he was accredited by the bar. And part of his lack of accreditation today, I think we can say, because he spent so much time trying to help people who were poor and had no funding. And fucked up occasionally. You know, we all fuck up. Even I have been known. I know it's sort of hard to imagine, but I have been known. I don't want this widely known because my enemies would make a great deal of the fact. But now, actually, you've got to admit it when you fuck up, because if you don't, then it becomes a something that you're, should we say, what's the word that Kennedy, John F. Kennedy used to use? Your protagonists use. It's a nice way of saying your opponents, or he used it to regard to reply to Soviet leaders when the Soviet Union was still a going concern. He didn't call them enemies. He called them protagonists. So, yeah, be as candid as you can, and I tend to get antsy when anybody tries to shut down candor, whether it be the Free Radio Santa Cruz Collective around hate speech, so-called, whether it be the Green Party Homeless Working Group around Don't Mock Us, whether it be the Monday Morning Group around Don't Criticize the City Council, or Don't Be Around Us when we're talking to city council members, because you might say something out of untoward. I think the truth in issues is important, particularly when you're dealing with power. It's really the only power that a lot of us have who aren't in power is truth. And it's really important to bring that up all the time, all the time. So the truth is, it's April 1st, and that ain't no joke, and this is Bathrob Spears Broadsides. I'm Robert Norse, and you're tuned to 96.3 Free Radio Santa Cruz. And to begin with, we're going to take another phone call. Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Good morning, Robert.
Good morning.
You're early.
Well, you know how it is. The early word catches the berm.
The early word catches the berm.
Or something. That's what they
hit
me on.
That must be something you made up.
It's April 1st, you know what I mean? I'm kind of lightheaded.
I was listening to you talk about Tim Fitzmaurice.
The Emperor Fitz?
Emperor Fitz. Mm-hmm. And the other... you said something about that they think, or that someone thinks that you're aggravating the situation,
right?
And they don't like
your, say, tactics or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever tried to find any kind of common ground between?
Well, you know, it's interesting. That's usually the first thing I try to do.
You're a really good mediator when it comes to conflicts with people because you allow other people to talk about it. But I just thought I'd throw that at you if there's any other way. I mean, you could mediate the situation to where we could all just get along.
Hey, Rodney. You know, I think what you're saying is important. I always see no problem with mediating. I think it's a good idea. For instance, in the latest round of, the Norse lynching squad that began a couple weeks ago around the Green Party's homeless working group, I've suggested to them repeatedly that, you know, and to the main woman who's been involved in this, Lydia Blanchard, that she and I sit down with a third person and work out, you know, difficulties, and, you know, I'd apologize for harsh words that have been said and try to be, you know, more decorous and, if you know, and gentle and respectful of her particular feelings.
Uh-huh.
She has refused to mediate. Michael Schmidt proposed it to her. Rabbi Chaim Levin proposed it to her. I mean, see, I think that if people feel they can win a conflict by excluding someone in some cases, and again, I can't speak for her inner motivations because now she not only doesn't want to mediate, she's proposing everybody shun me, that I be shunned. Right, and that, for example, emails from myself and Becky Johnson be turned back. I don't know.
Oh, that's right. She did come to Free Radio. We're going to have a discussion about shunning you.
Oh, good, good.
No, I'm just kidding. April Fool's.
Oh, you had me going there, bud. So, you know, but seriously, I mean, we have these kind of divisions that kind of crop up, and you have them too. You know,
yep.
Everybody does.
Yep.
And I really think it is good to try to mediate them. And even when you have real severe differences of principle, there often is a way to work things out. But one of the problems is if people are vying for the same pie, you know, or if they feel that only they, if part of it is an issue like 10 years ago, there was a group called the Coalition for a Safe Place to Sleep with a woman named Sherry Connable and another woman named Margaret Marr,
right.
Both of whom are articulate, well-spoken activists. Who are very good on some civil rights issues.
Margaret Moore beat the sitting ban, right?
She did for a while until Kennedy turned around and brought it back
right.
In a more restricted form. Yes,
right.
She did.
She basically beat the actual sitting
right.
Anywhere.
She did that because you and I and many, many others were out there on the sidewalks defying the ban in a peaceful mass action.
Being arrested for sitting down.
Right, at Cathcart and Pacific, a former hippie corner.
Yep.
But, yeah, you know, I mean, with these folks, we tried to mediate. They wanted to bar me from the two groups they were a member of, Coalition for a Safe Place to Sleep and Coalition to set up a Citizens Police Review Board.
Why do you think they don't like you so much? I mean, do you think there's a reason?
Well, I can tell you what they said.
All the bumper stickers on your car.
I think that really, it might have been better if I were driving a different kind of, actually, no, I don't think my car was quite
a BMW
relevant.
With a million stickers
BMW
on it.
BMW with an I Love Marty Wormhout bumper sticker on the back. Might
and
have
I Love Marty over.
Well, I know nothing about that. I really do. But,
yeah.
You know, the problem is that they felt that I was an impediment to their negotiating with the city council because they thought the city council was so upset with my coming and making speeches to the city council about issues. And, you know, also holding individual city council people accountable, like I said. And then there's, you know, council member Fitzmaurice, who continues to vote for the Dolphin League. And then there's council member Kennedy, who wants to cripple police review board and has you know, dumped it for 2.5
right.
years and now gives us a weakened version of it. When you say this, because it is, I mean, it's true. These are people who are, the, you know, you name names. Rotkin actually tried to have me arrested at city council for naming names of that in that way.
Yeah.
And I had to point out to him that there is this sort of minor bit of legislation passed 200 years ago, or more than 200 years ago, called the Bill of Rights, I think it's called. You know,
what
the,
is it? Bill of
Whites? The Bill of Whites, yes. It's the White Bill of Rights. And since I'm white, I have a Bill
Written
of Rights.
By white.
So, you know, your answer is, yeah, we got to mediate. But the answer often is, if they think they can exclude you without mediating, and they think that's more effective, then they push it.
Yeah, I just know from my involvement in, like, because I was involved in sleeping down on a sidewalk downtown Santa Cruz, and involved in other camping ban, criminal camping ban activities. And I basically kind of stopped doing it because I found it just really wasn't, like doing the sleep outs. I notice there's not a lot of those anymore these days. And I think we kind of realized that doesn't really work because all they do is they just ticket you and you go to court and you have to pay your fine. The same thing with like when I used to play on the street and stuff. I think we need to like really like figure out another strategy to take them off guard. You
know, I mean, I don't know. I don't have the answer, but...
Well, I both agree with you and I disagree. I think you're right. I think new strategies like Earth First type strategies that are more dramatic and...
Well,
kind
no,
of,
even that, because that seems to, you know, because people went and locked themselves down in the city council chambers, a few years ago.
Right.
And I don't think that really even had any effect other than it got a big media splash and...
Well, I hear what you're saying, but I kind of disagree with you in the sense I certainly didn't result in the camping ban or the sleeping ban parts of the camping ban ending.
Right.
But, for example, after the long 8 or 7.5 month Hopkins-Shauna Leamy's City Hall sleepers vigil in front of City Hall in 1996, which were sort of, you know, in which this the lockdown occurred,
mm-hmm.
was a real pressure. And Kennedy was preparing to open up a thing called what was it called? It was called an open shelter for with Citizens Committee for the Homeless, kind of recreating in a different form the Coral Street in a more restricted, controlled way. The proposal was brought to CCH and then vetoed by Catherine Byers, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But I think had that protest continued, I think it had produced the kind of long-term pressure that makes the council feel it has to do something, or oh no, we're gonna. I mean, they don't take the resolute total action we need.
Right.
But they are first of all sort of kept on and on focus with that, and it gives people in the middle who need to negotiate some negotiating power. And that's
right.
How I look at it. But you know, I understand what you're saying. You know, you get arrested and you're arrested again and arrested. You think, what the hell, you know?
Yeah, it's been going on a long time. Even like the when you guys occupied the offices. Too?
Well, we didn't occupy the offices.
No.
We came in during business hours and we left afterward. We were only there for relatively half the period of time. But yeah, and actually I'm about to play some of that court discussion happened right after court on April, actually it was in March, February 8th actually is when we had our last real lengthy discussion on the situation in the City Council coffee clutch, City Hall coffee clutch and tag team teach-in.
It just seems that all they do is get irritated, and then they're just like, it's Robert, we can't deal, you know, and then they just, like, somehow close their mind to stuff, you know, and I don't know, if we all, like, kind of thought about another approach, like a different kind of approach, just as strong, but maybe a little bit different, I don't know, I'm just throwing it out there.
No, and your point
I don't want to diss what you've been doing all these years, because you've been keeping
you better
the issue
not,
alive.
Man.
If you weren't around, there would, you know, people would just accept, oh, well, you know, you just can't sleep in Santa Cruz, you know. We'll just have to move to somewhere else, you know. You've brought it to light and kept it in the light, you know, when it probably would have, you know, people would have just accepted it like other laws that are on the books that people don't know about, you know.
Well, there are a lot of people who opposed the sleeping ban and camping ban and did protest before I showed up, and hopefully there'll be a lot of people who continue after I leave.
And I'm sorry to forget, but there was a reduction in the fine, right?
Right. That happened in February of 1999.
Right.
Although, again, as I was mentioning on the air, you can't find it in the damn bail schedules. The city attorney didn't forward it until we forced his hand with pressure from the Homeless Issues Task Force.
Well, how did that all come about? I'm going to hang up now so other people call. If you
Sounds
could just
good.
Briefly...
Sure.
Let me know. I'm kind of curious how that all came about.
All righty.
Thanks, Robert.
Thanks.
Bye.
In answer to your question, caller, as to how it all came about in terms of the reduction of the fine, when council members Cronesugar and Fitzmaurice were swept into office on a very strong vote in the repudiation of the Beach South of Laurel bulldozing boondoggle, as I called it, they had a majority with Catherine Byers to make some significant changes. And Sugar and Crone initially seemed to think that they might actually be able to do that. They stood up publicly with activist Steve Argue around police review at the town clock in the Stolen Lives Happy John Dine Memorial in November of 1998. And in December of 1998, under pressure from activists like myself and others, ranging from David Silva to even SCAN activists, I think, were talking this way because we were pressuring them, and maybe because they also feel if they have a chance, a political chance, and it's not going to risk too much of their butts, they'll get in there and make a point, too. The question was, let's change the sleeping ban, at least suspend it over the winter. Sugar, though he was very reluctant to, he's as bullheaded as ever, that's kind of the way he is. He's very, impulsive, impetuous, and, fiery. In a way, that's kind of his charm to some of us, even though I've repeatedly seen him violating the Brown Act, and he has treated me very badly, myself personally, and as a political person the last couple of years. He's got that. He seems to say on occasion what he's thinking, although that isn't always the case, and certainly isn't the case around Dolphin Lee. But he originally with Crone stood up for issues, and he tried to get the sleeping ban suspended over the winter 98-99. Was crushed by Fitzmaurice, Byers, Rotkin, Matthews, and Hernandez, council majority at that time, ably assisted by City Attorney John Barisoni. And after that, he kind of disappeared on the issue, and so did Crone. What Catherine Byers proposed instead of this kind of meaningful suspension of the sleeping portions of the camping ban, unless there were other crimes involving, you know, real public health and safety concerns there, she wouldn't allow that suspension to happen, even with those, you know, she's even with that proviso, even saying you could, you know, you can ticket people for all kinds of other things around sleeping if there's any abuses or problems, but she still wouldn't allow that suspension to happen. Instead, she set up this bogus little task force, and it was called the Task Force to End the, or to Examine, sorry, not to end, certainly not to end, to examine the camping ordinance. And this task force, when it finally, 2 months later, began examining the initiative that a number of us had put together to, and were circulating, and eventually got over 3,000 Santa Cruz registered voters to ask to be put on the ballot. Not enough, you need 3,900, but we got a bunch of them, showing the depths of the concerns about the human rights issue in Santa Cruz. She refused to even talk about changing the sleeping ban. And Crone and Sugar just went along because they said, well, we haven't got the vote, so we won't do any more. And what came out of all this was a sort of a series of small cosmetic changes in the sleeping ban situation. One was a reduction of the fine to $54. One was a statement that only the sleeping ban portions of the camping ordinance could only be treated as an infraction. Actually, any section there is to be treated as an infraction. No, I'm sorry. And just the sleeping and the blanket ban will be treated as an infraction. The camping, which means setting up a campsite overnight, was still considered potentially a misdemeanor if it was done twice within 24 hours. And that was reduced from twice within 48 hours, making it a little harder for police to ticket for a misdemeanor for a campsite. But since they almost never do, unless it's a protest, because they use a misdemeanor ticket to take someone to jail, that's the point of the misdemeanor ticket. Usually infraction tickets cannot be the basis for taking someone to jail and making what's called a custodial arrest, unless there is a concern that the person's identity is being falsified, if there's some other behavior like obstructing an officer. There's also a third condition. If it's a continuing course of conduct, there's some claim that you can also take a person to jail on an infraction citation, but that's disputed. So there were some changes made, and a couple more changes, including the saying two vehicles can park in a business lot per night with their written permission. A vehicle can park for 3 days per calendar month in a residence, and also the Winter Armory shelter. If full, tickets will be dismissed if tickets are issued during that time. So those were some of the changes that were made.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, Robert.
Oh, sounds like Free Radio Santa Cruz broadcaster and all-around bad boy, Steve Argue.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, I remember we had a lot of people moving on that at that time where we put that pressure on them, you know, a whole number of people coming out to this meeting down at Loudon Nelson, chaired by Byers. And
This is probably, thinking January or February of 1999, I believe.
Right, right. We had a lot of pressure going, a lot of people active around the issue, and I think we need to go towards that again. I mean, the idea of lockdowns and civil disobedience, I think that has a certain place, but getting the numbers out, I think, at big demonstrations and working on that, working towards a big demonstration coming up would be something I'd like to work with you on, and tying it to the issue of rent control as well, and the whole gentrification of Santa Cruz going on.
I would certainly be happy to work with you on that, and I would invite other listeners to call in, and either on the air, if you would like to talk about it on the air, or to call the Huff line at 423-4833. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, where there's actually either a person at the end of it or a machine that'll take a message, and you can kind of say how much time you might be willing to commit and how much energy and you know what you'd be willing to help with. So, yeah, I would definitely be up for that. I think that what we need is some kind of a push for something independently of just focusing on city councils meetings and city councils, endless machinations. I mean, I think we should show up at their bullshit anyway, but I think we should have some other objective, which is to organize more broadly or to do something else. I don't know, have a crafts fair right outside city council, or have a, you know, have our own teach-in where we do something else other than the city council activity, which actually draws people, so they feel, I didn't come here to talk for 3 minutes and have Fitzmaurice say, step away from the podium.
Right.
You know, that has to, in other words, if we can design something else.
Right, and it draws us into their whole explanations and, you know, and draws people into, to a degree, thinking like, you know, some of these activists are thinking that they're willing to get rid of Robert Norris in order to talk to city council members who are unwilling to meet with Robert Norris, but willing to meet with the rest of them.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is good going down and speaking out at city council, because it is televised and it gets the word out, helps get the word out. But I think having a focus around, you mentioned a conference, I think that would be a good thing, or a demonstration that's not centered around city council, like, you know, starting at the clock tower, doing something there, a big speak out, you know, and tying in the issue of rent control. I think it has a lot of potential in drawing together large numbers of people, you know, spending some time building it, you know, getting the word out, having planning meetings, and, you know, really get something big going.
Well, I see it. I think it's a good idea, and I also think it's a good idea to have smaller kind of gatherings that build, but not just an idea of showing up and everybody listen to a few speakers and then feel, we've heard all this before, and we've seen these guys endless times, you and me, and... Oh, I don't know, you know, Jim Costner or Skidmark Bob or, you know, even Sherry Connable. I mean, people who've already talked before, but to have something that actually happens, that is planned in terms of an independent kind of not just event, but, you know, I mean, there should be a buskers union should be going on downtown. I know that Phil Free was working on the buskers union for folks who are, you know, spare changers, for folks who are musicians, for folks who are out on the streets for different reasons. I may be, you know, misrepresenting them in some way, because I'm not quite sure about the nature of that union now. You know, for looking for, you know, kind of strategizing about the next three events that are coming up that week that we're not a part of, but that we could go to and represent. I mean, it's kind of a... And again, this is not right either, because I'm not talking about another big meeting of a group in public. I'm talking about a... something else that's happening in public that gets something done. That's why I mentioned crafts fair or something involving children, even, you know, where you actually provide alternate stuff going on, you know.
None of those things are counterposed to working towards building a mass movement
of
large numbers of people in the street. In fact, they can be complements of each other.
Uh-huh.
You know, when people see more people moving, when that gets people moving in a direction of thinking of more things, like more creative things as well, like what you're talking about. And, you know, having a big demonstration doesn't have to be all speakers either. We could get musicians down there, you know, and do something fun, exciting, you know, and inspiring, and having numbers of people out there. But it has to be something built right, where you know, we spend time getting the word out, getting more people involved and getting the word out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to do that. And
I know that you've been working with the Peace and Freedom Party, and also working at your own full time job, and, you know, scrambling for, you know, your own kind of residential support.
I really haven't been doing things on the Peace and Freedom Party, because I've just haven't been that excited about it, because there aren't the numbers there, you know, and I'm looking towards hopefully, you know, doing something that can have more of an impact.
Mm-hmm.
I like the perspective of doing something around the Peace and Freedom Party, but as of right now, we really haven't... It hasn't been that big of a thing in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And my interest now is more around activism, around some of the issues where, you know, we have these so-called progressives in power, including
mm-hmm.
Fitzmaurice of the Green Party, who are not on the side of working people, poor people,
right.
And I think that needs to be exposed, and we need to mobilize people in the street. streets.
I agree, and for those who don't know, you have a show from 12 to 3 every Saturday on this issue on Free Radio Santa Cruz, which, by the way, is what you're listening to, 96.3 FM. Free Radio Santa Cruz is what you are tuned to out there. For those of you who want to call in, phone number is 427-3772, and anything more you want to say, Steve?
I talked to someone yesterday who told me about a homeless man who was just beaten up by the police, and I want to get more information on that and hopefully get information to him about avenues he can take. But he was apparently beaten up, and then I talked to another man who I'm going to have on my show next week who I don't believe is homeless, but who was also beaten up by the local police.
Recently or?
Both very recently.
Do we know where and when this happened?
I'm going to have this other man on my show, though, and get some information out about this.
Well, I know yesterday on your show you spoke about the death of a friend of both of ours. Well, I don't know much of a friend I was to him. I mean, he wasn't living in my house, or my room, I should say, but I would pass him frequently on the street, chat with him. I've had him as a guest on the show, at least by tape. That's a writer.
Yeah.
A man who was a sort of a chunky fellow with a, Bronx or Brooklyn accent.
Yeah, walked with a cane.
Walked with a cane. Used to be in front of the Palace Stationery. Was there until last week. You say he died of a heart attack?
That's what I was told. Another homeless man.
Let's hope it's just a rumor. I mean, but I guess it's not. Huh?
No, I mean, he hasn't been around since that happened either. I'm just... You know, they say he died of a heart attack. I, you know, heard of other people on the street who they say have died of heart attacks. I don't know where the information really comes from, but, I just say that's what I heard.
Well, I think people who are eyes and ears on the street, and he was one of those folks. He was there a lot of the time during the day and the evening. He would be there. You know, I think he probably went home or had a place to go at night. I don't think he slept outside. So maybe we don't want to call him technically homeless or houseless. But he certainly was a member of the community on the street.
Yeah.
And I think that is very important for bridging, making these connections between those of us who are inside and those of us who are outside. And kind of kept me and others advised as to what was going on out there, and makes it less likely that police are abusive by simply being there. Just having eyes and ears there and a mouth to speak makes it less likely the police are going to be abusive. You know? So.
And I know he felt that... that a lot of the work I was doing was having an impact on the police, in that police that complaints were made about recently were taken off the street. Now that's what he said. I don't really know if that's exactly what happened.
Well, I know he also was somewhat salty tongued about you. He went, "Why is this guy in jail? What an idiot!" When you were in jail.
Really?
That doesn't mean that he wasn't also sincere in what he told you.
Right.
Because he feels like he felt like he was a savvy guy, you know, who knew everything, and he thought, why would a stupid person be so stupid as to put themselves in jail under these circumstances? But you know, I think, and I explained to him that different folks use different approaches, and I think he admired to some extent. I mean, he was both, you know, like you shake your head at a son of yours who you think is a wayward son, but at the same time you admire his courage or his straightforwardness or his, you know, you went to jail for 7 months to intervene in a situation where a police officer who was found later guilty of abusive behavior, excessive force toward a woman holding a child, you moved in to help that person, and you did so with a punch, and that punch earned you 7 months in jail, and you stayed there, and also more assaults in jail from deputies there that I guess are still being resolved in the courts. So,
yeah.
I want to thank you for calling in. Is there more you want to say? Or?
No, thanks for your show.
Hey, thank you.
All right, and contact me about, let's contact each other about...
Sure, do you want to leave a number for people to call you directly on this issue of organizing? Or?
Yeah, definitely. 457-9754, extension 1169.
457-9754, extension 1169, to speak to Steve Argue. Activist extraordinaire. Thank you, Steve.
All right. Talk Bye-bye. To you later. Bye.
And this is still Free Radio. Call in line is still 427-3772. And two things I wanted to say in response to a couple callers back. I believe it was Skidmark Bob who called in. Didn't identify himself as such, but I could see through his thinly disguised voice mannerisms, asking whether... what can we do? There will be some new strategy. And what about the possibility of mediation with folks that you disagree with? You know, he went into those two issues. And I'm going to caller, keep the phone ringing. We're gonna answer you in a moment. Actually, what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about Peter Marin of Santa Barbara, an activist who has been working on establishing vehicular sleeping down in Santa Barbara. And I'm going to talk about, I'll begin with that as an example of how there has to be, I might as well talk about it, because it looks like the caller is going to wait, and I appreciate that, caller, please, but do call in as soon as I'm finished here. Peter Marin is a poet and an activist in Santa Barbara. I've talked about him, and I've had him on the air. Who has been working, he worked in protests in Santa Barbara, which was a very active homeless rights community over in the 80s. They had Reagan there. They marched across the country. They had walked all the way to the White House. It took 8 months. They actually ended their sleeping ban, the sleeping ban sections of their camping ordinance, for 3 years in Santa Barbara before opportunistic politicians, after the death of Mitch Snyder, put it back into legal force. Peter Marin was there for all that. You can read his poetry in Street Spirit, new issue which will be coming out shortly on the streets. But he also has recently been working on the necessity defense for people fighting camping tickets, as say coming into court and saying, look, yeah, he slept outside, he violated the law, but she did this, it's true, but look at her situation. There was no shelter space, and it was to avert a greater evil. And they've actually won in Santa Barbara with that defense, because that's now allowed by the Tobe and Eichhorn decisions statewide. So he also has been pressing for a kind of a Eugene, Oregon-type ordinance in Santa Barbara, which would allow people in vehicles to sleep, three vehicles to on a public street area in different locations throughout the city, and then a much larger area in the county where people can go and have a gone-by-dawn zone. Well, he's recently found, I spoke to him last night, that all his work trying to be diplomatic to the politicians around this issue doesn't seem to have had much effect. He said he now begins to wish that he had been less diplomatic and simply raised his voice on the issue and spoken truth to these people, because, one, you keep your morale up that way, and you keep your... And they're delaying and throwing into committee, doesn't this sound familiar, their so-called Human Relations Committee, a proposal to put certain parts of the Eugene Ordinance in power. And part of that Eugene Ordinance is also three vehicles in a church parking lot, which we have here, and isn't really of much use. I mean, it has some use, it has helped a few people, but it certainly doesn't deal with the problem head on in terms of, do you have a right to sleep in your vehicle at night, and if not, where? It doesn't deal with that issue. So he's really a case study in a person who said, speak the truth, you know, go after the issue, confront the politicians, you know. But again, you don't have to use any one issue, and I'm not saying everyone should follow the same road. What we don't want to do is exclude each other. What we don't want to do is diss each other in some fundamental way that reads us out of the community. So while members of the Homeless Working Group and the Green Party are trying to read me out of the community, their group, I should say, and members of the Monday Morning Group excluded me last Monday, I would not say the same for them. I'd say they're welcome to come and to join this group, provided they stick to the sleeping ban they're welcome to say whatever they want, but I think that the focus of our group has to be fundamental changes. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
This is Good Morning Bob.
I don't believe you, caller.
Now, this is Vinnie Merman Socks.
I still don't believe you, caller.
Okay, this is Steve Argue.
Now I believe you.
Well, hey, what's happening?
All right, Steve, what's happening?
That's Merlin, you fool.
April Fool's.
April Fool's Day.
So what's up, Mr. Merlin? You know, I have your record in the studio.
Oh, what a guy, a winner.
You know, you have been trying to get me to play the Temptations since, I don't know, the fall of 1821.
Ever since we slept together last weekend. You want to have sex at the bathroom all the time at the bars, and I keep telling you, no, I don't want to.
Well, I understand that, you know, the record is now on the machine. All I have to do now is figure out how to work the new turntable, and I'll be all set.
Well, what are you thinking, man? You're talking about all these ideas about coming up with new ideas to get people's attention towards the sleeping ban. Remember, we had that anti-sleeping ban concert, some of the best bands in town. We had a grand total of 15 fucking people show up at the Civic.
Are you talking about Jim Costner's attempt at organizing last fall?
The anti-sleeping ban concert, remember, me and Dave Silva did.
Oh, the concert. Oh, right. That was the concert. Yeah, David has tried several concerts around the initiative to end the sleeping ban, both of them. And they were busts, and that's it's kind of hard to rent a huge auditorium, and a lot of that has to do, I think, with trying to do organizing kind of by yourself, which is always hard to do. And
well, it's a matter of getting attention. I mean, you know, you have attention. I mean, well, if we get like rent like a storefront or something, put a mattress in, maybe we can make love all day long.
I think it was a good. I mean,
leaving band.
Yeah, I think it was a good effort, and I think in the sense that I mean, I actually warned the people who did these concerts, I think you may remember me at the time, saying don't spend huge amounts of money for the Civic Auditorium. It's ridiculous.
Well, yeah, we learned that lesson the hard way.
But, you know, the fact of the matter is the idea of renting a venue for a concert is not a bad idea, if provided you have enough people working on it, enough lead time, and enough, you know, decent bands. I mean, I would guess. I'm not a concert organizer, so.
Well, we had good reviews. I don't know why people didn't come. You know, next time we want to rent some, I'd probably suggest, like, the Vets Hall, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've seen there have been, you know, really successful events in the Vets Hall, and, I mean, there's some things like, activist Becky Johnson and I were talking the other day about a memorial feeding concert event around the death of Sean Alimi, who, as you know, is a Feed the People activist who died in a car crash 2 or 3 years ago. He was a man who was not afraid to feed people right downtown all the time when Food Not Bombs retreated to the town clock in San Lorenzo Park, and they thought they did so for good reason, because it was a more comfortable venue. He fed people right where they were, downtown, and that, of course, produced continuing confrontations with the police, who are sort of the arm, to some extent, of the merchants down there.
Not to mention people gain weight.
Yeah, making all of us very chunky with his peanut butter and love sandwiches.
Peanut
yeah,
butter
and
love sandwiches.
Stuff.
Hey, so, man, I got an idea that'll draw attention to the, you know, to draw people's attention to, you know, anti-sleeping ban.
Hit it.
I mean, I don't see what it is off the city council's ass to just make that thing, you know.
Well, I wouldn't worry about the city council. I've said this to people like Michael Schmidt. I've said this to the homeless working group and the Green Party. You don't worry about the city council. Worry about getting the community aware of and active on the issue. Once they get active, the city council will have to do something.
Well, if I could have, like, you know, Skidmark Bob and Steve Argue and V-Man all like, you know, getting together and talking on every show about sending some money, then all the money goes to get Merlin drunk, and then I get shit-faced drunk every fucking night and call up people and bitch them on the phone.
Somehow I think that would be a new approach, perhaps, but not the best.
Effectual, though.
Right. Well, I'm going to let you ponder that one and move right along, as we say, and perhaps that was just one of your April 1st suggestions.
Well, did you hear any of these rumors about Skidmark Bob?
Sorry?
Hear any of these rumors about Skidmark Bob?
I have not heard any rumors about Skidmark Bob. Let this be, however, I'm about to move on.
I'm not just kidding, you know. I'm just trying
just
to, you know, I'm just an only child.
Thank you for calling, Merlin. Anything you want to end with on a joke or a serious note?
I'd like to hear that record I got you.
I'm going to try to do it. If I could figure out how to work the new turntables. It's all a mystery to me, I got to tell you.
Okay.
Talk to you later.
Okay.
So, it is Free Radio Santa Cruz still. The phone line is 427-3772. We have another caller. I really appreciate, by the way, this dialogue we're having here, because I think, even though a lot of these are the same voices and regular faithful callers, I think we're talking about an important subject. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, this is the V-Man.
Right.
Mm-hmm. No. I don't know if you heard.
Drum here.
I don't know if Merlin heard, but a few of the people that work in the community television place, uh-huh. I guess they work weird hours and stuff, so they come into my work every now and again. Mm-hmm. But I was playing Free Radio once, mm-hmm. and had Skidmark Bob on there, and they recognized his voice from somewhere. So I said, "Oh, how did you recognize him?" And he goes, "Oh, one of the people on one of our cable shows." Like, "Oh, Merlin." Oh, yeah. And, well, we do the set, or they do something about
this,
like,
better be relevant to civil rights, or I'm cutting you off
gets,
in 15 seconds, buddy.
So they're going to offer him a guest host position, and they're gonna get rid of his show. I don't know if they even told him that yet.
Really? Well, I'm sure that's of interest between you and him. In the future, however, you are not to call me, or I will shun you. And by the way, you're not allowed at any more meetings.
Oh, that's okay.
Thank you.
I'm all.
Just trying to emulate those certain people in the community who see a strong approach to the sleeping ban as being an attack on me, which I don't always agree with, but certainly makes for interesting discussion on the air. And I'm not saying that Merlin is doing this, or that the janitor who you just heard on the air just trying to unsuccessfully disguise his voice as the V-Man. I guess the V-Man knows it's not the V-Man. My apologies to the V-Man. However, let's avoid this sort of incestuous dialogue inside the collective here. We want to get back to the issues at hand, which have to do with, for example, the mayor's attempt to ban activists from city council offices. That's the building that you have on your left as you walk toward the city council chambers from the library. As you walk along that corridor, that entire building is actually called Room 10. It's a bunch of rooms, but it's called Room 10. Becky Johnson, Bernard Klitzner, and myself, we call ourselves the Coffee Klatch 3, have been banned from that building and are facing a hearing on April 12th where we may be banned for up to 3 years from that building. And that building houses every city council office. It houses the city manager's office. It houses the mayor's office. It houses the files of the Homeless Issues Task Force and the files of city council documents. And while it is true that it is possible through an elaborate, somewhat more elaborate process to get access to papers moved to other offices, we can ask the city manager to come bring them, and that has been done on one occasion. It does make it more difficult for us to access documents that ordinary people can just walk into and look at, walk into the office and look at them. And more important, it, I think, chills protest in this community over issues that Mayor Fitzmaurice, should we say, is less than eager to be confronted on, ranging from rent control to squandering affordable housing money on housing and on projects that actually destroy housing, like the Dolphin Lee project, to a failure to control a rampant police force, like failure to deal with the drug war downtown in any meaningful way that would give some kind of example to the community and the country in how to really take a different approach. All these issues, if pressed, apparently, in the city council offices, and I don't mean with breaking windows, screaming at the top of your voice, even occupying a nonviolent civil disobedient occupation. I'm just talking about showing up, sitting in a chair, and asking to make an appointment with a city council member, or asking to see a city council document, and doing so in a fashion during the city council office hours. This has made been made illegal for three of us, and I think the message to the community is don't you dare try to do what Norris, Johnson, and Klitzner did, or we'll try to ban you too. And the pretext they're using, of course, is that we harassed administrative aide Anna Brooks, who is the mayor's chief administrative aide. And I've talked about it in the past. You're going to hear some discussion of what happened after the February 8th hearing, which was really the last full hearing we had on this issue. We did show up again in March, and they kind of postponed it till April 12th because the mayor did not want to show up for a subpoena. He wants to smash that, or quash, as they say, that subpoena, so he doesn't have to appear and answer questions. Naturally, I wouldn't want to have to answer questions because he's engaging in behavior that, for me, is illegal. He should be, in fact, indicted for this kind of stuff. You go in and harass peaceful activists, tell them to leave your offices as a city official, that's a more serious thing than doing it as a private individual, because you're not just intimidating them in an assaultive manner, which we told police that he was being intimidating and harassing to us, and they wouldn't even take a report. But as an official, you have so much power that it involves a real restriction of political liberties. And so Fitzmaurice's behavior, independently of this injunction, is, in fact, abusive of the rights of all of us in the community, particularly of those activists he did it to, which did include just me and Bernard Klitzner, but also a man named Gentle, and I believe at least one other person. And it was a repeated pattern of behavior by Fitzmaurice, and it was recorded on tape, so there's no question that it happened. So is it being discussed in the papers? Is it being a subject at the Green Party for making Fitzmaurice accountable? Not a chance. Not happening. Instead, the activist, the coffee klatch at the Green Party, has been declared a bad thing because it's not been conducted by Green Party principles and wasn't authorized by the Green Party and was involved with some sort of personal conflict between myself and the mayor. That's the allegations made by Green Party Homeless Working Group's subcommittee on that, which they failed to present at the last Green Assembly, but they presented to me privately later on. And it's hogwash, and it really is. It's complete hogwash. What it means is that Fitzmaurice is untouchable in the Green Party, that's the message it sends out to me. But the question is, can activists be secured their basic rights? And can individuals who come and sit in a public space during the day, who are there for a legitimate public purpose, be intimidated away by Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice and then by the city attorney and Tim Fitzmaurice and his administrative aides using a bogus injunction process? Right now, the answer seems to be yes. I think that's a very serious situation. Let's hear some discussion in the hallway after the February 8th hearing. I will remind you, on February 8th, attorneys for myself, Bernard, and Becky came back to court and said, this behavior by the mayor and by Anna Brooks is a slap suit. That is, it's not a legitimate statement that we're trying to harass It is really an attempt, a politically motivated attempt, to get rid of us from the office because they found nothing illegal with our behavior. So they're using this civil process to try to get rid of us. Judge Kathleen Acow, or is it Catherine Acow? I guess it's Kathleen Acow, denied us the slap suit, but still there has been no ruling on the merits of whether we are actually harassing Anna Brooks, the administrative aide, or not. And that's going to come up later in April after this April 12th hearing on the whether the mayor gets to avoid a subpoena. Let's hear some discussion in the courtroom, I should say outside the courtroom, as to what actually was going on. And, well, check this out.
A little on the noisy side. We did go outside, and some people did elect to stay outside. So, you know, we did utilize that area as well. But I think the conduct that we had when we were actually in the office was of a different nature than out in the courtyard. And I know there's certain things
Becky
that I would
Johnson
do in the courtyard that I would not do in that office.
Yeah.
You know.
Shocker.
Does it make sense that we would go to this office 17 days in a row to steal pens? We
right.
had very serious business there,
well,
some
like
very serious issues.
Letter. I mean, that's not really clear. Clear.
So, you know.
Hey, we got the fire alarm on here. The real concern.
The breakout alarm.
Is I think that not only has the public been chilled from dealing with this issue, and city council, okay. Don't hold that against her.
No, you can hold it against my excellent quote, being that this wasn't your behavior that was extreme
it is the city council.
Yeah, I mean, and the problem is it now attempts to redress this, you know, ongoing, what would you call it, crisis.
Oh, it was freezing last night.
Yeah,
it's
30 degrees.
It's chilled both from the point of view of the public, because there some people are afraid to come to those offices now, and it's also chilled with respect to the council, because it's become more of a pariah issue, because Mayor Fitzmaurice has succeeded in essentially quelling discussion of this issue, and that's the real sadness. I mean, you know, I live inside. I don't...
Mm-hmm.
You know,
anyone who believes that this wasn't a content-based objection to their particular speech is living in a fantasy land. I mean, you know, it's so clear that if they had been in there to, you know, honor the mayor and for all of his wonderful accomplishments and sat there with a sign saying, you know, you're so wonderful and we love you, and even if they had been talking and stealing pens, it wouldn't have mattered. Sure. It was the content of their message they didn't want to hear. And the you know what I pointed out in the past is the key to the lock was in their hands.
Yeah.
You know, all they were asking is to put this on the agenda so that the public can speak about it.
Right.
You know, that's what they were asking. They weren't asking for the world. They weren't asking for, you know, so the key was literally in their hands. They could have unlocked this, you know, situation by just putting it on the agenda.
This is Attorney Kate Wells.
Do you plan to, or can you, I don't know how this works, raise again the First Amendment issues in the evidentiary, and that's going to be
absolutely, because it's constitutionally protected activity is exempt from the harassment statute.
Right. Which is what, I pointed that out at the end there, but, you know, to me, I'm sitting there the whole time saying, well, now, wait a minute, she said that they were conducting constitutionally protected activity, and that's specifically excluded in that code section. And so how does that...
It looks like it's actually a feel-good decision.
What is being discussed here is Attorney Kate Wells saying that, well, the judge said that you were doing constitutionally protected activity, the coffee clatchers, but if it was constitutionally protected, then the mayor, and I should say the administrative aide's attempt to bar us from 50 yards away from her offices was illegitimate. Couldn't be granted, because if there's a constitutionally protected activity going on, and also there have never been allegations of violence or threats of violence made against us in this situation, then it's inappropriate to grant such a harassment order. It amounts to a political order, and that was what Kate Wells found so strange, that the judge could both say, yes, it's constitutionally protected, and yet, yes, the order is okay, at least until we have a full evidentiary hearing.
Depends on which side.
Yeah. Well, in other words, a feel-good decision in the sense that it's a decision that will please the mayor.
Mm,
it,
yeah.
It will please the people in the city council offices who don't want to discuss these issues.
Yeah.
And I guess it will please Anna Brooks. But, you know, her job is to deal with the public through through difficult times. She never called the police, other than apparently on one time when she felt that Becky wouldn't leave at noon, even though she did. I mean, that is to say, there's no record of any kind of violence or harassment. But here we are.
I think the fact that she would take the time to point out in her declaration that when she dropped papers at some point,
yeah,
that Becky's mere act of leaning over to help her was seen as some form of
ran
around the desk, shouting. She said, "Don't interfere with office business.
You know,
I ask you not to interfere with office business."
I used the word paranoid.
Pick up some letters that had fallen on the floor.
That was some sort of character assassination, but
I think that's a pretty paranoid thing to automatically assume, by somebody leaning over to help you pick up some papers.
There was a second incident where she accused me of interfering with office business, where Leslie Cook had come in and asked that Jean Arner be contacted right away, that it was a fairly urgent matter. And Anna said she was going to put a note on the door of the conference room because he was in a conference. And I noticed that she never put the note on the door. And as she was walking out the door because she was going on errands, she wasn't stuck at that desk all the time. She went back and forth all the time. She answered phones in other parts of the building. As she was leaving the office, I said, "Don't forget about Jean Arner." And she walked out the door, shut the door, stopped, turned around, came back in, stood like right in my face and said, "I ask you not to interfere with public, with the business of this office." And just made a huge deal about that, implying that I was interfering with the business of the office, which I wasn't. In fact, if anything, I was trying to be helpful.
But what do you say? I imagine Barisoni would say that should have been assigned to you, that you guys were stressing her out. You should have backed off.
Should
I mean, I imagine
Heather
that's his
Brunner
argument.
Talking.
I don't know.
True.
I mean, the question is, should the public, cater to the sensitivities of one employee and suspend their First Amendment rights, or is the responsibility of the mayor and, whoever is the city manager to make sure that employees are properly relieved, that they are, that they have proper counseling in these matters.
The law states it has to be a reasonable person under the same circumstance would have to be feel harassed in this situation, and it's a double standard. And then in addition to that, the person actually has to be to suffer harm from this harassment. So it
can't be intent. And we never had any intent to harass Anna Brooks. Our intent was to petition the mayor.
All kinds of other avenues for addressing this. They could have, as Kate pointed out, set up rules where you could only be in the office for a half an hour.
Yeah.
They could have made specific concerns to us about, you've got to keep your voices down, which we did whenever those concerns came up. And they didn't. But if you listen to the tapes, which were not allowed in evidence at the original hearing, you'll hear endless silence, rustling of papers.
Right.
Occasionally hear me go up and say, "Anna, I'd like to give this note to Councilmember Crone. Can you make a copy of it for me, please?" That's what you hear.
And you hear Anna Brooks on the telephone being cheery
and quite
upbeat,
loud, actually,
and the day, 2 days before she filed her declaration on December 21st, saying that she was emotionally distraught. 1 day before, the day that happened, the day after, you can hear on the tape her being very cheery and upbeat and cheerful.
I mean, how can judge a cow based, look at the three things she said at the end that led her to believe that, this was, what did she cite? She cited interrupting conversations. But if you look at Anna's log, how many conversations were interrupted? There's nothing, are these simple assertions sufficient to bar unpopular people from the city council office?
I think what she was saying, if I'm understanding her correctly, was that it wasn't the individual instances. It was in her mind anyway. May or may not be.
It has to be a reasonable person, not just in her mind.
Right, but in her mind, a reasonable person, in her mind, perhaps, I don't know.
You're talking about Catherine, a cow, or are you talking about...
Well, this is what a cow seemed to be saying, was that it's not just the individual instances, it's the continuous nature that
it's
going to be a big deal. But
the declarations don't show a continuous... They make the alleged in the vague way, but they don't present any documentation. And we try to counter it by saying, listen to the tapes.
Right.
They don't listen to the tapes.
Right.
So as a consequence, we're chilled from going back to City Hall. The issue is buried. And you're taking notes on these ridiculous, oh, you know, does a pen, picking a pen constitute harassment stories, which, when you should really be covering how many people are freezing their asses out there. I mean, frankly, that's more important, right, isn't it? I mean, this is sexy, but... If we had a constitution here, but I think she's, as I say, I think she is playing to the politicians here. She has a debt to the politicians here, and she's, it would be very difficult for her to say, this is a slap suit, you're engaging in unconstitutional behavior. Think of the cost to her politically to do that.
The judge
even if the evidence, you know, justifies it, it's a difficult decision for her to make.
Contributions the next time she runs for office.
The idea of limiting people in this office in an equitable manner, regardless of the content of their speech, it would seem to me the very fact that they didn't do something like that would imply that it was, in fact, the message that they didn't want to hear.
I mean, there's I believe that they've taken a plethora of inherent problems that have been there since the 50s and didn't express themselves to some extent in trying to put it on these three people in their song. There's a lot of logistical or time and movement problems in that office. Council members don't even all have an office. They have to share. They have two desks crammed in a cubicle meant for one. But the
pressure of that office being too small got dirt.
We're not responsible for the architecture of that office.
I'm blaming you for the architecture of that.
I would say it's her fault. As taxpayers, you should have been lobbying for a larger building.
We have Richard Quigley here. Richard, what happened today?
They upheld the convictions on my... Yeah.
Yeah. They upheld the conviction on your...
On my helmet tickets, first three. But certified the case, I get to go on up to the 6th Appellate Court.
Think of the thrill.
Oh, no, it's going to be wonderful because those idiots, it's just a short step from there to get back to Ron George where we can make some sense, because I can promise you that...
And that strange final voice was Richard Quigley, talking about his own case. He had some really interesting things to say, but unfortunately we're limited in time today, as we always are, and we are going to be conducting a popularity poll as to what we should play next show, which is from 6 to 8 on Thursday evening here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3. This is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. I'm your broad bathrobe here, and I'm coming at you from... Phone line 427-3772 if you want to get back at me and talk to me directly, tell me all your concerns and problems. Don't exclude me from your meetings. Hey, you're not excluded from my meeting. Come on in. Let's talk. You got difficulties. Let's work them out. We got differences of opinion. Let's air them and let's see what we can do. And by the way, for those who are listening to this show who have joined the lynch mob of the last few days, whether it be at the Monday morning group at Baker Square that is planning a town hall meeting, it looks like it's being orchestrated by the city council now, or at least a lot of the strictures are being passed by the city council for their approval before it proceeds, and that's unfortunate. Or if you're a member of the Green Party Homeless Working Group, which apparently has suspended meetings pending my agreement not to attend meetings or my agreement to censor my journalistic activities, or it's not quite clear exactly what is required here for us to continue to work on the real issues like the sleeping ban. Abandon this kind of exclusionary behavior. It's not appropriate. Get back on the issue of the sleeping ban and accountability for Tim Fitzmaurice. Having a man with Green Party label on his chest for mayor is not only insufficient justification for abandoning democracy inside, or abandoning your focus on human rights inside the Green Party Homeless Working Group and inside the Green Party, but it is also a shame and a disgrace to the Green Party to have this kind of thing happening. And it shows a kind of, we have to say, blatant hypocrisy by Green Party members who have a platform about sleeping bans that says no sleeping bans and have a mayor who enforces sleeping bans and won't put sleeping ban repeal on the agenda. And it's really straightforward. And Green Party members need to line up at the next city council meeting, which the next regular council meeting will be a week from Tuesday, though there is a council meeting on Tuesday, which I'll be talking about briefly on this show. And they need to say, one after another, we are members of the Green Party. Our Green Party platform says end the sleeping ban. We expect this council to take action on it, particularly those officials who we endorsed in the last election and who made commitments to us on this issue. And if 10 or 15 Green Party members actually did that, I think we'd see some changes. And I'll tell you, that doesn't need to go through any Green Party process. That doesn't need to go through any consensus process. Individual members of the Green Party can stand up and do that as individuals with consciences if they choose to do so. And the fact that very few of them have, in fact, no one, none of the Green Party members as representatives have, and that indeed would require a process. But there's an April meeting coming up, second Saturday. It could be on the agenda. I actually have it on the agenda, or I tried to put it on the agenda, and they have this now more elaborate process for getting anything on the agenda, which I wasn't even allowed to read. I should say it wasn't even the proposal that I wrote out was not even read at the so-called Green Party Homeless Working Group, steering working group. That's their other. They're all working groups, but they're actually little committees that they tell you they're open to the public, but then when you talk about them outside their venue, you get this incredible shitstorm of criticism if you're in any way other than, you know, positive about what's going on. And you're accused of violating basic principles of the Green Party and being violent and all this sort of thing. But in fact, what's happening here is the monitoring and the focus is on the activists who are raising the issues. The criticism is of us instead of Mayor Fitzmaurice or those politicians in power who are dragging Green Party principles through the dirt. And that's the sad truth. And I encourage those of you in the Green Party who know this to stand up and say it and stop attacking the activists. Turn back to the real issues. That's what needs to be done, and quickly. Because the Armory Winter Shelter closes on April 15th, as I understand it, although I haven't gotten... they sometimes can keep it open until the end of April. I don't know what's going on with that, but that's more 75 more people, maybe 75 to 100 more people, since while the official limit is 75, they sometimes cram people in. On the streets, illegal, under the sleeping ban, that's women who the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women have already said need that sleeping ban ended, because women can't sleep in well-lighted areas, they can't sleep in groups, they can't use police services for fear of uncovering their own warrants. Green Party needs to act on this. It's time-sensitive. It's time to act. It's time to stop attacking the activists and start dealing with the problem, the politicians. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, is it music time yet?
Sorry?
Is it music time?
No, it's not music time yet, Merlin.
Well, I got my candy bar here. And
you stay. Now, remember, we're talking about civil rights. This is not a music show.
Oh.
Talk to you later.
Okay.
But we try to be inclusive, and indeed that we're going to try to get that turntable rolling. But before music time, we have a real treat for all of you. You may remember last show we had in the studio the Rabbi Chaim Levin, who has met with Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice, or Emperor Fitz, as I like to call him in my disrespectful fashion. Although I think accurate, considering the kinds of strictures he's put on city council and the kinds of imperious approach he has to cutting other council members off the agenda who want to put on human rights issues, like Ed Porter tried to put the sleeping ban on and was told no way. And there's sort of an imperial quality. Chris Krohn, the vice mayor, is now apparently saying that there will be no discussion of the camping ban at the Michael Schmidt Monday morning group town hall meetings coming up in June, only of the sleeping ban parts of the camping ordinance, and then they'll spend a lot of time talking about other homeless issues. Always a red flag, by the way. Whenever you hear city council or any group that starts out to talk about the sleeping ban and ends up talking about every homeless issue under the sun, it's an attempt to dilute the situation. It's an attempt to avoid the issue. And don't let people tell you otherwise. They'll say, we want to bring in everybody from the city and county and find solutions. You know, well, yeah. But the reality is it's the city that has the worst anti-homeless law. The county's anti-homeless law actually doesn't have a camping ban. It has bans on sleeping by the side of the road and living in vehicles, and it has bans on closed parks at night. But, for example, on private property, you actually can sleep in vehicles, and you can sleep outside, and you can camp, although no doubt the Planning Commission would go after you if you did it for a long enough period of time in a visible enough way. City law is bad, very bad. It's been the focus, and instead we're getting this diluting process going on, which I know to some extent, and I have a lot of respect for Michael Schmidt's work in the last year, and he's the one who's leading this, is with the intention of getting a lot of people involved, making it so the city feels more supported by the county and by the Watsonville and Scotts Valley and all these folks of different governmental authorities. But in fact, these kinds of conservative people are far less likely to help in this situation, I believe. And maybe Schmidt can perform some wonders. You never can tell. He's done some remarkable things in the past in terms of, at least for his own, being willing to speak up as CEO for the Chamber of Commerce, or in spite of his status of being CEO for the Chamber of Commerce. But in fact, when you see the sleeping ban suddenly being crowded with other homeless issues, that's what happened with the Homeless Issues Task Force. Buyers didn't want to deal with the sleeping ban on the camping ordinance in February of 1999, so Krohn, her pal, created the Homeless Issues Task Force, as I termed it. And then what happened was Sugar and his counsel completely ignored every recommendation, except for another police officer, of course. We always can use more police to deal with those homeless folks. So it is an out-and-out disgrace, and I'm afraid there's no other word for it. All you folks who would prefer to be nice to the politicians, you cannot be nice to the politicians without playing fast and hard with the truth and without betraying the homeless community. I'm afraid that's the reality of it here. And if that doesn't sit well with you and you want to try to exclude me for bringing these issues up, well, then that's what's going to happen. But I'm afraid that this will eventually result in the exposure to the community of what's really going on, to wit, nothing in the Green Party on this issue. Very little in the Monday Morning Group. It's been pushed off center again by people like Councilmember Christopher Crone, by activists who believe that by being nice to people and rushing off to city council to see what they want to do and trying to arrange bridges with city council when there's nothing to bridge unless you have a real political power force to bring forward, unless you have the community organized to say, we'd be happy to talk to you, council members, but you got to deal with the issue. We're not going to exclude Norse. We're not going to exclude Becky Johnson. We're not going to exclude Skidmark Bob. We're not going to exclude Vinny. We're not going to exclude even Merlin will be allowed in if he's sober. Keep that in mind, Merlin. But, you know, everybody gets to come in if they behave properly. We cannot engage in ideological exclusions or exclusions on the basis of records. That's what we call blacklisting. And I had a sense of this. I had a real chilling, direct sense of this several days ago when I called up a member of the Green Party that I didn't know in order to talk to her husband, who was at this homeless working group meeting where they spent 90 minutes, count them, 90 minutes attacking me for behavior that happened outside Green Party meetings and wasn't relevant to any topic on the agenda. And I wanted to talk to him about some subject. She was very friendly, and then she learned who I was and said, don't call here. She didn't know me. She had never talked to me, to the best of my recollection. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I just don't know. I talked to her, and I didn't know her. And it was this chill, this horrible sense of unfairness of being judged before a person knows you, of being excluded, of being discriminated against, that I'm sure happened to hundreds, thousands, maybe tens of thousands of people in the 50s around the communist witch hunts that happened to people. That really is the basis for laws that I don't agree with, like slander and libel laws. I don't believe in suing someone for libel or slander. I believe in free speech. But if an inner coterie of people, if an inner network of people can spread lies about one individual and get that person excluded and shunned, and that is openly being discussed in the emails, back and forth of the Green Party with respect to me. Emails, David Silva is a part of this process now, it appears, unless I'm mistaken. He's one day he says one thing, the next day he says something else, and it's kind of sad. And I'm not really naming a lot of names around this issue, because my purpose is not to deal in personalities and not to target people in the Green Party. Although I do name people who have engaged in specific behaviors, because I think insofar as those behaviors are abusive and exclusionary and turn away from the issue of the sleeping ban, it's important people be accountable for them. And also, I'm not violating any confidentiality. The Green Party meetings are supposed to be open, and yet when you talk about them, you suddenly find you are on their shit list. You have to maintain this kind of uncritical, positive attitude to what they're doing, regardless of how little they're doing. And I can't do that. That would be wrong. It would be misinformation to the community for me to do that. I won't do that. It's really quite simple. And they can certainly close down their meetings. They can attack me, and that's their right. Anybody has a right to criticize anybody else, you know. But I am going to have to continue to be honest about what goes on. And I guess for those Green Party members listening who are looking for, you know, hooks on which to hang me, I mean, here's one. You know, I believe in the truth about situations. Now, it is true that when confidential subjects have come up in these meetings, I have kept confidence. And there's not been a claim that I haven't. What they don't like is my referring to the Green Party as homeless rights as lost in the shallows, you know. And I urged homeless people to come to Green Party meetings to rescue a sleeping ban repeal. And it was actually done in a very gentle, lighthearted way. But the humorless, sour, and actually have to say vicious, I even called it lynch mob response, was to spend 90 minutes personally attacking me, bringing in people from the outside who had grievances against me from 6 or 8 months ago. And that's a whole ball of worms around scan. But no specific discussion or concerns about something I may have done wrong in terms of disrupting a meeting. I've never done that. I don't do that. Anyway, I think there's an opportunity for all of us to realize, however strongly we feel about problems we have with each other, we need to, if not work together, at least work in parallel ways and not spend our time trying to attack each other. So let's try and do that. That's what I try to do, although, again, as I said, when you're attacked, you have to defend yourself at a certain point. At least I'm finding that that's true to some extent. I'm also trying to spend less time doing that than would be, that's a temptation to spend a lot of time defending yourself, and that's wrong. Because the real issue is the sleeping ban. The real issue is civil rights for homeless people. The real issue is rents escalating beyond belief. The real issue is decent wages, decent jobs, a change in the community, real democratic process that we don't have, real community control of police. All the issues we need to be considering and are being diverted from. So let's not get diverted, but let's get diverted in the following way. At the last Bathrop Spears Broadsides, Rabbi Levin, myself, and several people from the streets were talking. A woman named Willow is this really wonderful, outspoken, but naive and straightforward person out there, talking to two officers, Officers Azua and Gunther, at a hippie planter a week ago Thursday. And there had been an incident of violence where purportedly, and I was interviewing a guy who talked about Officer Gunther supposedly hitting a young man at Farmer's Market the day before, and then he was taken off in handcuffs for some kind of warrant. And there's still some controversy about what happened there. Complaints were filed at the police department. I'm not prejudging what Gunther did. I actually haven't interviewed Gunther. I doubt he would talk to me about it anyway, but we've had conversations and other things. Perhaps I will. I think there should be a public hearing on it. There never will be, because the Citizens Police Review Board doesn't do that. But in any case, Gunther and Azua double-parked their squad car in front of Cathcart. I'm sorry, in front of, I guess it's Church. No, Lincoln and Pacific, which is right next to the New Leaf Market, half blocking the traffic, and got out of their cars and were standing for about 15 minutes just staring at this group of young people, rainbow people, punk people, folks with, mostly young, mostly with nose rings and tongue rings and rings of different sorts and tattoos. And I was interviewing this guy about the Gunther assault the day before, what he alleged to be the Gunther assault. And Rabbi Chaim pointed out the police officers to the side and asked, why, isn't this a little intimidating to have them here? And a conversation developed where we walked over to those police. Now, I played some of this conversation in the last show. I'm going to begin again for those of you who weren't able to hear it, and also because I want to maintain continuity. I think it's not only very funny, but it's also very revealing as to attitudes that police have, and also very interesting to see how a dialogue, an attempt to get an open dialogue with the police can actually just drive them away because they are not equipped to deal with an open dialogue. Let's hear this and enjoy.
Do you feel comfortable with the police hanging out behind us?
Yeah. I mean, I think that my opinion is not threatening to them at all.
Do you think they would do a better job if they talked to people instead of just sort of hanging out like that and just sort of like being separate from the...
You're referring to two police officers leaning against the wall,
yeah,
not engaging in any kind of hopscotch activities, which just might be more fun.
Just watching.
So how come you guys aren't joining the group, man? This group?
I don't feel no love for this guy.
Well, you gotta give love to get love.
No, you know me. I always give love out.
Well, come on. You see here.
Come on.
See, they're coming over to love. We have a love in happening here.
Yeah.
So we have a mass love assault on Officer Azua here.
Okay. All right,
I always give love. Right. And a lot of the time, the police officers don't even... I say hello to them, to like the tall...
Well, hello, how you doing?
Hi, good, how are you doing?
I'm doing great today.
Good. That's like the most human contact I've had with the police officer.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, then, you know what? You've been missing out today.
I say hello to them, and they don't even look at me. They don't even respond to me, nothing.
Oh, well.
And if you were to run my name and do whatever...
Why would I do that?
Well, no, I'm just saying, I have had one parking ticket.
Cool. Well, then you're what? You're a better person than me, because I've gotten a parking ticket
before. There you go, see? And I'm treated like a criminal. I'm not even talked to, not by you, I'm not saying by you guys, but... by all the other police officers around here. It's not even like I'm alive.
Well, you know, you've got to be a little more upscale in your approach. I mean, you know, get a big car. I mean, maybe possibly a fancier dress. A fancier address might be nice.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
a house would be good.
A house would be good, you know.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Well, you have a Sephardic Jew look about you, you know. There is a quality there.
I believe that's
very nice, actually, but that's just my prejudice.
Yeah.
So, Officer Azua, were you the man who gave the chalking ticket earlier to some of these unfortunate people?
I was here earlier today, yeah.
Can you tell us exactly, for the benefit of Free Radio, what is the law regarding chalking? I mean,
well,
is it illegal to chalk on the sidewalk?
Like I said, I was here. I didn't give the ticket.
You were a witness to it?
Yeah, I was a witness.
Do you know the name of the officer who did give the ticket?
I think it was CSO Hoy. I'm not sure.
And based on your perception of what was going on, because there's a lot of chalking here, I noticed, on the sidewalk, if you saw an individual chalking on the sidewalk, would that be just prima facie basis for a ticket, or what would your sense be about that?
There is a meaning code for that, if I understand that correctly. And also, you know what? If you really look at it, it kind of defaces the city by doing all this right there. And, you know, there's art, and then there's defacing the city's property.
Well, isn't this washable chalk?
What's that? Well, you know what? It is. You know what? It is washable chalk. However, until somebody comes out here and does it, look at, there's no pride in this area. No one has any pride in the area that they have. You just look at this. Look at it. It's all a mess here. It's all dirty. You got backpacks laying around here. Then they get defaced. I mean, you know what? If you had a little bit of pride in the area that you have, and you get out here and you get little papers and draw, we probably wouldn't have a problem.
Well, do you think that as a volunteer, and not just a police officer who's paid to do a job, but as an individual who sounds concerned about the scene, and I've talked to you in other locations like the Beach Flats and other places in the city, and you think that you would be interested in, say, leading an art class out here?
Well, you know what? If I knew how to draw, I probably would. But you know what, Mr. Norris? As you know, I've always helped the community. I've, you know...
A couple of years ago,
didn't I give you a toy for your child? While I was doing the toy drive down?
You played Santa.
I did play Santa. So, you know what? I'm always willing to help.
How many people have you arrested on drug offenses in the last year, officers?
Wow. I couldn't recall. But you know what? Getting back to the helping thing, if you and I work together, we can make a difference here. Isn't this whole concept about working together, building bridges, and making a difference?
But of course.
Okay.
But in order to do that, you have to do things like change the laws that you're enforcing, don't you think?
Mr. Norris, you're changing the subject.
No, I think that is the subject.
You're changing the subject. We should build a bridge and come out here and make a difference. You have resources available to you that I don't, and I have resources available to myself that you don't.
I think we should share resources.
Exactly.
No question about it.
Exactly. So whenever you know what, let me give you my business card. Because whenever you want to make a difference, because I'm working down here now, I'm always willing to help, Mr. Norris. You know that.